Welcome to the Civic Commons.
Hey Dan, which would you rather do? Give blood or give away hard-earned money?
Oh, blood. Hands down. You get cookies and orange juice afterward. Cookies and orange juice afterwards.
Yeah.
It's way better than giving away cash.
Well, but you need money to buy things like cookies and orange juice. You need blood to live.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'd donate blood. That's much, much easier than... I mean, it is kind of serious, though. Because you only got about like 8 or 9 pints in your body and you give one pint away.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It does replenish itself. So, yeah, I'd be happy to donate blood before I'd be donating cash.
But what if you gave just a little bit of your money away?
Wait, do I have to still donate blood if I give money? Is it an either or?
Well, perhaps. Let me play you this. I went to a blood donation and take a listen to this. Now, you just came off the gurney, didn't you? How do you feel?
I did, yes. I feel fine. I'm Laura. I'm from Cleveland Heights.
And you just gave blood, Laura, and obviously blood is something we need to live. Why would you give it away?
I guess I just try and give what I can. I can't give much financially, so this is a way to give back to people.
The topic of our show this week is financial taxes and tax revenue sharing.
I think that's a kind of a complicated issue. I think that it would be good because especially the way schools are paid for and that type of thing, I do think when you have poor communities where there's not a whole lot of taxes being paid, then all these services and all the schools, everything suffers. But I could definitely see the other side of this is what you earn, this is a community that, you know, you get a certain job, you work so hard, so you have these perks in your community. So I could see from the other side.
I see the other side too, because let's say I'm a Cleveland Heights resident, let's say we could have a new playground because we're raising more tax revenue, but instead I'm asked to agree to give that away to another community, and so I don't get that. I mean, are you willing to give some stuff up in order to help another community?
I can appreciate that maybe that's a lot to ask of people, but maybe you don't give up the whole playground, you give up one of the swing sets, and then another community gives up one of their swing sets or something different that you don't have to give up the whole, you still get to take advantage of all that you've earned, but just take a little from, and then if every community that can afford to do that does that, I think you're at least giving something. I think that you just give a little, just like you said, like the pint. Like, I still have all this blood. Like, it'll be okay. Like, I'm not going to miss it, really.
So that's it, huh? Topic today, revenue sharing as blood donation.
Give all the pints you can.
A pound of flesh.
Well, really, you know, we're going to talk about participating in the life of your community. Because participation means you and everybody else.
That's the title?
That's the title this week.
Participation means you and everybody else. It's the Civic Commons. I'm Dan Malthrop.
I'm Luke Frazier.
And you can find out more at theciviccommons.com. Every week we try and take a look at what's going on in the region. You know, there's somebody I wanted to bring into this program today. He's our project director on this whole issue of collaborative planning at the Civic Commons, just about everything going on at theciviccommons.com that has to do with collaborative planning, tax sharing, all of that stuff is the work of one Jason Russell. Jason Russell, it's good to see you.
Nice to be here, Dan. Hi, Luke.
So, Jason, what is it we're talking about, really?
We're talking about the issue of collaborative planning. We have a number of different initiatives and efforts going on in Northeast Ohio right now. We have different communities studying, sharing police and fire dispatch. We have the Regional Prosperity Initiative. We have this new HUD Sustainabilities Program, which actually is a collaboration on the federal level between the EPA, the Department of Transportation, and the Housing and Urban Development Department, where they created this loan program to have regions plan regionally and collaboratively. How can we change the way we plan cities and communities on a regional basis?
There's a lot of issues. I mean, like from the very small, like let's buy road salt together, to the very large, let's plan the entire future of the region together. Somewhere in between is the Regional Prosperity Initiative, which is maybe somewhere in between, but it's actually pretty substantial. This idea of sharing taxes so that the whole region might prosper.
Right. And I think that's why we want to get everyone in the community involved in the different conversations, because it's such a broad issue that we can get different ideas and different solutions from different people, because it does range from the very small things to the very large. It's a very diverse region. We have rural areas, we have very urban areas. It's a lot of different perspectives here in Northeast Ohio.
You know, we had this forum, we participated in this forum last week at Cleveland State University. There were about 100, 120 people there. What was your sense as to whether or not people are ready to share their blood, so to speak, if to continue the metaphor?
Everyone at my table, at least, that I helped facilitate a small conversation at that forum, was okay with collaboration. It was what exactly does that entail is where the meat and the potatoes really came into it. It's, let's talk about what we're actually going to share. I'm okay to share, but what are we going to share? And once we break down into those finer details, then we can have some serious conversations.
Well, we've got Hudson Mayor Bill Curran here. Mayor Curran, welcome.
Thank you, Dan.
We totally did not know that you know a lot about blood banking, but I'm guessing you get the metaphor that we're driving at here.
I do get the metaphor. What you're talking about is the sharing of a necessity, sharing something that is vital, but yet at the same time, only a slice.
I got more blood. It's going to be all right. It's not like you're saying that you want to take all of the taxes from, you know, that everybody pull every tax dollar together, but it's just a portion.
It's just a portion, and also it's a healthy thing to do, because it, like in blood banking and like in donating blood, it stimulates the system to produce more and to replenish itself and to grow more healthy.
Mayor Curran, last week you participated in the forum that we were just talking about a little bit earlier at Cleveland State University. It was with IdeaStream as a sponsor, Andrea Tarice, the filmmaker who made that Crack in the Pavement film. We got clips from that film up at theciviccommons.com. She was involved as well. It was a great forum, mostly, I thought, because the House Speaker, Bill Batchelder, was there as well. What did you think came out of that forum for you in your position, not as Hudson Mayor, but your position as advocate for the Regional Prosperity Initiative?
There are hundreds and hundreds of people that want to see a change in the way that we function our policies and function our cities. That doesn't mean a complete casting out, but to take some of the best practices that we've seen around the country that have made healthier economies, regional economies, and apply them to our intricacies here in Ohio, and specifically for us in northeastern Ohio. But there are a lot of supporters. And it also indicated to me that there's some misconceptions from what the regional prosperity proposal is, and it's important for us to communicate what the true proposal is.
Number one misconception in your mind is?
There's a misconception that the term is used tax sharing, and one comes away with thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to give up something. And it's really not what the proposal is. The proposal is new growth, commercial industrial only, tax base sharing, but only after new growth takes place. So there's a baseline year that's established for where you have what your tax capacity is. And then if you have growth, you would share a slice of that tax base.
Okay, it's a big slice, though. You're talking about 40%.
It's a big slice on the contribution, but then everybody contributes, but everybody receives, because then we have a distribution mechanism, and it's based upon population and tax capacity. So even if you're a contributor in the 40%, you do get tax base back based upon the formula and what is happening in the region.
So if you're,
so
if
it
you're
might the, end up being only a 10% donation. It might be a 10%. Receipt.
So if you're the municipality that's growing gangbusters, you're Medina, you contribute to this and you don't get a whole lot back. You get probably the least back. Somebody's going to get the least amount back and be the greatest contributor. But if you're East Cleveland, you're not growing at all. Are you contributing anything?
Well, you know, you can't say that until we have the first base year, okay? Now, Medina has grown exponentially, and Medina has been the subject of what we call no population growth sprawl. But they have their issues about providing infrastructure, about providing the safety forces, about providing those things that cities have to provide as they have growth.
At the forum, we had one of the Medina County commissioners there.
Steve Hamley.
He actually acknowledged the fact that most of the people who live in Medina that we're providing services and new infrastructure for don't actually work in Medina County. They commute to the other counties.
His figure is 50% of their working adults leave the county every day. Now, that's one of the highest in northeastern Ohio. In my city of Hudson, fully 70% of our working adults leave the town every day. So what Steve is saying is if we don't have a vibrant region, I don't have jobs for those 50% that are leaving my county. Therefore, they won't have that sort of growth. So we need to participate in a vibrant county.
I want to come back to something you said before that's not about giving up or sacrificing. But if I live in Shaker Heights or I live in Cleveland Heights and Cleveland Heights gets new commercial and industrial growth, I'm going to give up some of that tax base to participate.
It's based upon what their net growth is. They may have a new commercial industrial establishment, but at the same time, they may have lost something else. So you have to net it out in any given year. So after they net it out, if they have had some growth, because every community has transitions.
Sure.
Okay. If they have some growth.
Office Max leaves, University Hospitals comes in.
There you go. There you go. And you have
businesses
to net it out.
Businesses move from Macedonia to Hudson.
But it's, and they do that on their own volition.
I know.
Okay. But there is a lot of competition because every community is subject, especially with their school districts, to provide the vast amount of the tax base for those school districts. Many communities have substantial property taxes for their services, along with income tax. And the income tax is based upon earned income that's earned as long as it's not earned somewhere else. You pay it in the community in which you earn it. Let's use Shaker Heights as an example. Let's suppose Shaker Heights, which has about 7% of their tax base, is commercial industrial, where Cuyahoga Heights, 50% or better of their tax base is commercial industrial. But they're two different cities. They're wonderful cities, but they're two different cities. If there is a net growth in Shaker Heights, they would then be a candidate for a contribution. All communities are candidates for contribution. East Cleveland is a candidate for contribution. Hudson would be a candidate for contribution. But it is what is netted out. In fact,
given how much potential a city like East Cleveland actually has, they're a strong candidate.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But they may need help now to get there. As at the forum, one of the wonderful mayor of East Cleveland, Mayor Norton, said, "Help me now, I'll help you later." That's a great term to use. That's exactly what they're saying, is that help the inner ring suburbs, help any suburb. There are outer ring suburbs that need help. And any given year, you may have zero growth, and that means you don't contribute anything, but you may receive.
But what I've heard from some people, Mayor, is that, okay, I understand over the long term, but right now, there's something going on in my community that I need tax revenue to address. You know, that it's fine and good to have a future in mind, but there's really something going on right now that's going to take away from that new growth tax revenue and distribute it somewhere else.
I don't understand how it would take it away. I really don't. Because most growth in most communities happen not necessarily because of any economic development that they have done. It's because they have been selected by that particular company to either grow within the community or to relocate. But what they all do, every company, and they should because of the way we have it set up, they ask for concessions. They will say, "We are looking at two or three other communities. Provide us some concessions to come here."
Right, but there's economic development departments in these cities that whose job it is to go out and try to make sure that their growth is new, and perhaps it could build upon expansion of companies there, but also something new.
And that's probably been one of the biggest growth areas for Northeastern Ohio is economic development departments. Every community has an economic development person there, and they should. But to the point is that where's the collaboration between the communities? Where are people working? Where are they going? Look at the patterns that they're going. And so they're competing with one another. And in some cases, there's poaching.
Yeah, and I actually really like the fact that you've brought up the competition aspect of economic development in this region.
Mayor Norton said that thing at the forum about the biggest loser.
Being the biggest loser, right. Whoever throws out the most tax credits or tax abatements ultimately gets the company but is the biggest loser. And will RPI or the Regional Prosperity Initiative, will that get rid of that type of competition between communities?
Let me give you an example. And this is a factual story that happened to me in Minneapolis-St. Paul. Several years ago, there were a troop of us that went up to Minneapolis-St. Paul to study their system. And while parts of what the Regional Prosperity Initiative is proposing, it is not Minneapolis-St. Paul's program. It is using the best practices of all the programs that we've studied and the intricacies of the policies here in the state of Ohio. Put all that together, knowing what the hurdles are. So I'm talking to the mayor from Bloomington, And that's where the Mall of America is. If any of you have been up there, you land at the airport. Bloomington is right next to it. It's a transportation hub. So he was joking to me. Now, they have had their system in place now for about 35 years. And he said how sometimes he'll know that there's a recipient community at a function, and he'll go over and teasingly say to the mayor there, and they've grown, Bloomington's grown exponentially, are you enjoying my tax base? And I said to him, I said, you know, it sounds like perhaps you're not happy with this. He says, oh, no. He said, that would be a misinterpretation. He said, let me tell you what happens. If there's a proposal for an economic development advancement here in Bloomington. Now, there's 187 communities that started with this program in 1970. There are 187 communities today that are collaborating prosperously. One of the lowest rates of unemployment in the country. They have grown their tax base and their business base substantially. I'm not going to go into all those statistics. He said, when that happens, I have 186 communities calling me. How can we help? Do you need a truck? Do you need some pylons? Do you need an extra police officer while this construction is going on? How can we help? He said, they're cheering me on. He says, I don't have to worry about them competing with me or that something's going to be taken away from me. And he said, and I sleep well at night. He said, because I have grown more than I could have if I hadn't had this collaboration.
So what you're saying then is that basically the win for one community becomes the win for everybody.
That's correct.
I want to switch gears for a second. We have this segment where we turn the mic over to a citizen. It's a segment we call Glad You Asked. Who do we have this time, Luke?
We have Don Pawalski. He's a structural engineer here in town, and he lives out in Lakewood. And he's going to talk about what he takes from these topics of tax revenue sharing.
I believe the notion of regionalism and tax revenue sharing between the communities of Greater Cleveland is a great idea. For many reasons, the strength of one community, whether it is a downtown area or an outer ring suburb, truly depends on the whole. Most people do not live, shop, play, and work in the same city. Even if they did, I am willing to bet their customers or business partners live in a different city. But what do different parts of the region offer, and how do they connect to the whole? Downtown has everything from Fortune 500 companies to entertainment venues. Lakewood is residential, and East Cleveland has factories. Now, even though someone who lives in Lakewood may rely on a factory in East Cleveland, why would they want to support the city itself? I can make the argument that the factory could be located in any city. Plus, East Cleveland has a history of corruption and a high crime rate. But there is more to the equation. For instance, land in East Cleveland is cheap, and that helps the bottom line of the industries that call East Cleveland home. So how do we promote regionalism? To give a specific example, the idea is to use the City of Lakewood's tax dollars not to fix a sidewalk within their own city limits, but to instead maybe give it to East Cleveland to help maintain an aging infrastructure. Is that fair? To a Lakewood citizen, probably not, but to an East Cleveland citizen, it may be a blessing. In order for me to give up having my sidewalk fixed, I would need a terrific understanding of where my money is being used instead, and it better benefit me in some way. This is the point where I believe regionalism falls apart. Let's face it, government is not organized enough, especially when crossing city limits, to limit a program that takes away my tax dollars, gives it to someone else, and tells me exactly where it is going and how it will benefit me. It just doesn't seem possible. Could you imagine how large a government agency would be in order to facilitate a program that could complete all of those steps? Not to mention we are living in a time of tight budgets and deficit spending, and I'm sure a large sum of that potential pool of money would have to go to administrative costs, and larger government is not something I'm willing to give my tax dollars to. Regionalism is a great idea, but I am sorry to say, in my opinion, it's just not feasible. I'm Don Pawalski, and I'm glad you asked.
You're with the Civic Commons. I'm Dan Malthrop. Luke Frazier's here. Jason Russell, our project director, is here. He's one of two project directors who work at the Civic Commons. And Hudson Mayor Bill Curran is with us as well. We're talking generally about collaborative planning, but also about the very specific idea of sharing some form of tax revenue or tax base, as we've been talking about it as well. Mayor Curran, Don Pawalski raised a really interesting point there about how do I know where the money's going to be spent? If I'm a taxpayer or I'm a business owner, and sure, I choose to site my business in Lakewood and create new tax growth there, new tax base growth there that will be contributed to the pool, how do I know that's a good thing?
Well, as Mr. Pawalski said, as in the analogy of the sidewalk is not taken away. Again, this is only on commercial industrial as far as the property tax is concerned, and it's only if there's new growth. If there's new growth, then there's additional revenue that's coming to that community. And in order to have new growth, it takes a collaboration with the region to have even more new growth than what we've seen in the past 10, 15, 20 years.
Where does the money go, though?
There's a contribution, and then there's a formula for distribution. Every community would contribute. every community would receive. Now, only to be used for economic development or infrastructure within the community that is, if it's a recipient.
So economic development, does that mean it's going to pay for somebody else's tax abatements?
No.
Isn't that what economic development is these days?
In some cases, for some, it is, perhaps. What businesses want is that they want to have infrastructure provided to them that is suitable for their business. They want to have a workforce that's ready to come and work. They want to have services, police, fire, EMS. That's what they want. And those things have to be provided by a community to support and provide the foundation for their business.
If I am a resident of a city, then I get to elect officials, and I get to make sure that they're reflecting the my wishes for the community, or I won't vote for them next time, right? But once a city decides to share some of that new growth with another community, I don't have a say with how that other community is using it. So I'm being almost disenfranchised in a sense.
I don't think you're right about that, Luke. It is earmarked for specific utilization if there is a recipient. At the same time, there is additional growth within your community because of the collaborative nature. It's a very small slice. If this had been in place for the past 10 years, most communities, it would have amounted to less than 0.5%.
Don said that he was afraid of another layer of government being created by RPI. So could you explain how RPI looks in a physical sense? Is there an RPI office that's going to do economic development for the communities that buy into this? Or what does it look like? Who says where the money goes?
There's not an RPI. What it is, it's a system that works. And what we work through is our current municipal planning agencies, bringing them together. We have four dealing with just transportation. And we have multiple sewer districts. I mean, there's a lot of work to be done yet on this, okay? But already the conversation is being held, and people are meeting to talk about what is the best plan. The one thing we have to do is to create a database. We can't even make a regional decision because we don't have the database. I mean, that's just one element, just having the right information to make the decisions on where things go.
Mayor, with all the history and examples of communities not being able to collaborate because we have a real fiefdom perspective, you know, even the smaller communities around Cleveland decide that they need their own fire, they need their own economic development officer, they need their own, you know, everything, even though they could easily collaborate with another community. What makes this different?
In the last couple of years in having this conversation, there are communities that have now started to even have the dialogue. Also, the fiscal problems communities are having are driving them to have that dialogue. I'll give you an example in our local area. Recently, there was a new interchange that was put in on State Route 8. It was originally funded strictly by federal tax dollars and a contribution from the City of Stowe and the City of Hudson. And in that area, it's already been zoned for a commercial industrial. Because of the conversation, though, we now have what is the first JEDC of three cities in what people know as JEDs.
Joint Economic Development Zones.
And actually, it is four entities. Cuyahoga Falls, Boston Township, City of Stowe, City of Hudson. But there are any number of conversations and efforts going on, and not just talk. I mean, legitimate action taking place on collaborative shared services. That's the low-hanging fruit. We need to be at the helicopter level and say, what's holding us back in collaborating? And we have policies in our own constitution here in the state of Ohio. We have tax policies that force us to compete with one another. But just 2 days ago, the County Commissioners Association of the State of Ohio, in looking over the legislative agenda for this 129th session, have voted unanimously to endorse and recommend to the legislature to amend state law to enable tax revenue sharing between local communities so economic development revenue can be shared across the region. Now, that is huge. That, again, is an offspring of what we've been attempting to do.
You know, you mentioned low-hanging fruit earlier, and I was just thinking in the context of what we're dealing with the budget crisis right now. We're looking at reduced municipal funding from the state. We're looking at the possible elimination of the estate tax, which a large percentage goes to the cities. How can we attack some of the low-hanging fruit that don't need legislative changes to help some of the cities fill those budget gaps that could result from the changes we're seeing in the state?
Well, we can continue programs like FishGov Now. and stimulate those conversations and support them and make sure you bring people together to do it. The fiscal problems of cities are going to drive new ideas and new procedures. That is for sure. And, you know, our own native son, Lester Throw, the noted economist from MIT, stated a number of years ago, in the global economy, cities don't matter. It's regions. And that's what we're looking at. Is trying to compete on the global marketplace. This is not a hockey stop of what we're proposing. It's setting the foundation for sustainable, nonpartisan, collaborative efforts for economic development. It supports local decision-making and control. This is not a merger. We don't propose any mergers. That's up to communities if they want to do that or our systems want to do that. What we're saying is by collaborating, it supports our local communities and will support them for the future. And by the way, I want to make sure that everyone knows that the proposal from the Regional Prosperity Initiative is an opt-in. Okay?
It's not mandatory.
Absolutely. It's not mandatory.
That's important. Okay.
It is exceedingly important. So the program itself will dictate the community's participation. And most of the outlying communities around Greater Cleveland and Northeastern Ohio have contributed to this effort because they understand the value, even if they're doing well, of sustaining that doing well and how important it is.
There are links to your website, neo-rpi.org, on our website.
We need people to go to the site and really understand what the proposal is versus the sound bites that people pick up and then they create a position. To understand that we, like everyone else, wants to make sure that this is as transparent as possible, that this is a benefit to Northeastern Ohio, that it is not any sort of a tax-based takeaway and or authority takeaway. Matter of fact, this supports the local authority by making it, by assuring that our communities can survive together.
So say I'm listening now and I'm on board. What do you want me to do? Call my city councilman or council member? Call my state legislator? Who? What?
Well, go to the website, www.neo-rpi.org. Read the materials. See all the different reports. And register on that website to get the updates and then become politically engaged. Look for where the next conversations are going to take place. Participate in those. Invite one of the steering committee members or those who understand the proposal in to speak to your local group.
You're doing block clubs?
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Hudson Mayor Bill Curran, and I also will just say, you can go to theciviccommons.com and join the conversation. Hey, that about wraps it up. Mayor Curran, I can't thank you enough. It's been a stormy day. I forgot to say, though, usually we do these citizens roundtables right as part of the show today. The storm, the snowpocalypse has prevented
us. It totally
iced us out. That means we get to do a two-part show on this.
Absolutely.
Next week, we let the citizens roundtable give this a listen and really respond, and we'll hash it out. I think we'll probably have both sides represented at least, although I suspect there's more than two sides to this. Mayor Curran, thank you so much.
You're more than welcome.
Jason Russell's been with us. Jason, you know the credits? Can you do the credits?
I do not know the credits. Do I have a teleprompter?
The Civic Commons is funded by the James S. and John L. Knight Foundations, and our production partner is WJCU at John Carroll University.
And we also get support from the Fund for Our Economic Future, as we mentioned earlier, and our audio editor, Daniel Steinberg.
Daniel Steinberg, the most excellent Daniel Steinberg.
Yeah, and this program is produced by Now Productions, which is also Luke Frazier, producer extraordinaire. This is the Civic Commons. I'm Dan Malthrop. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
What conversations do you want to start? Add your voice at theciviccommons.com.